Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Robots Radio presents...
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
And we will be your lore master and lore mistress for the evening. We're talking some Dritz. We have already covered Dritz. We covered Dritz a few months ago, but it was always in the back of my mind. Like, mm-hmm. 1 hour isn't enough for this character.
No.
And even at the time, like, well, maybe we should have done a two-parter. Even 2 hours wouldn't be enough for this character, because there are dozens of books, of novels of this character, the video games, comic books. Mm-hmm. There's just so much to unpack. And so we are going to do exactly that. We are going to go through the Legend of Dritz book series. Saga by saga, or series by series. You know, the entire series is broken up into trilogies or quartets. And so we're going to start off. We're not going in publication order. For simplicity's sake, we're going to go chronologically. So we're starting with what is book one, but it wasn't the first book published. Actually, R.A. Salvatore, who wrote all these Dritz books, went back and sort of filled in the gaps after his first trilogy, which, you know, introduced the Dritz character, and he became wildly popular, and he's like, oh, I should write some more about this guy.
I am ready to hear it.
So the first book is called Homeland. So Dritz Duarden is born the third son of the 10th noble house of the 10th noble house of Menzo Berenzen. There we go.
Hey, you did
it. Nailed it.
Perfect.
So House Duarden is the 10th noble house of Menzo Berenzen. Duarden's ancient and more formal name is Dermin Naashez Bernin. The matron mother of the house is Malice Duarden, and that's his physical mother. His father,
mother,
but this is
Malice.
Mother, oh. Yeah, I know, right? It's gnarly.
That's scary.
His father, but this is unknown to him until the end of book one. His father is the House Duarden weapon master, Zach Nafane.
Oh.
So a quick little backstory. The drow culture is extremely matriarchal, with mm-hmm. men simply needed to A, fight, and B, procreate. It's pretty much the only positions that they hold as men in drow society.
Right.
And so the third male child, per drow custom, is to be sacrificed to the spider goddess Loth.
We love her.
We do. She's very aesthetically very awesome. In execution, yeah. Very terrifying.
Yes, exactly.
So Dritz, being the third born son of House Duarden, this is to be his fate until So we mentioned earlier that House Jordan was the 10th noble house when Dritz mm-hmm. was born. Almost simultaneously during Dritz's birth, his house attacked the 4th noble house, House de Vere, and actually defeated them, causing Ooh. Them to lose their place in the pecking order and for House Jordan to actually move up to 9th. And it okay. was during the chaos of this battle that the second born male, the second boy of House Jordan, Deenan, attacked and killed his brother, the first born male, the elder boy, Nalfane. So, yeah, you're right. That sort of acceptable, you know, in normal sort of society. But normally, in a normal society, fratricide would be looked down upon. But it's in the society of Drow, this type of ruthless behavior in order to move up in station is not only tolerated, but it's almost kind of encouraged, you know, like that you're, if you're seen to be like that sort of gung ho, then people kind of like, hey, like maybe you have what it takes.
So kind of a kill or be killed situation.
A little bit, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
this action has two different consequences. So okay. Deenan is now the elder boy of the 9th noble house of Menzo Berenzin. And Dritz is now the second boy, and as such, does not need to be sacrificed.
So it's not just which order they came in. It's survival as well. Right. Surviving.
Right.
Okay.
And so it's interesting, you know, to know that it was, you know, the Drow sort of like ruthlessness, in particular House Duerden's ruthlessness, that ends up being its undoing. You know, like normally you said it's kill or be killed. And so usually that sort of ruthless behavior, that mindset would benefit them. But it, and, you know, and, you know, spoiler alerts for like a 30-year-old book that we're actually going to cover later on. But Dritz essentially, like, you know, because of what happens, sort of, you know, becomes like leads to the downfall of House Jordan. So, like I said, it's interesting, like the way fate works. So meanwhile, as part of House Duerden's attack on House de Vere, the wizard Gelruus Hanet, aka the Faceless One, and they call him the Faceless One because like it looks like his face is all melted off, attempted to kill Alton de Vere. And this was as part of an agreement between the Faceless One and House Duerden. However, Gelruus's younger brother, Massaj Hanet, killed his brother, killed the Faceless One, and then almost went ahead and killed Alton before Alton struck a bargain with Massaj. So, you know, Devere, and the thing with when a house of Menzo Berenzin attacks another house, it needs to be complete and utter annihilation. They have to basically kill anyone, and if there are any survivors, they have to be captive. They have to be, and when we see that later on, but you know, there no loose ends.
Okay,
Alton surviving is a loose end.
Yeah,
and so Massaj is going to kill him. You know, unknown to him, like what's going on, like what started this in the first place. But Alton strikes a bargain with him. He says, you know, I'll tutor you in your magical studies, you know, under the guise of the Faceless One. Like, I'll pretend to be the Faceless One while also attempting to determine who's responsible for my house's destruction. And Massaj agrees, like, hey, like, that sounds like a good idea, because, like, he always kind of held it against his brother, his you know, spellcasting abilities. And
yeah,
so he's like, cool, like, I learned how to do that. But he's still like, you know, he's also the kind of guy who would kill his brother. And so he agrees, but he's like, well, we've got to, you know, like, no one's going to believe you're my brother if you look the way you look. So we've got to fix that. And so he melts Alton's face with acid so that he appears to be the Faceless One.
Oh, they went all in, like all in.
Man, it's awesome.
Talk about committing to a bit.
So, small matter of note as well. In his possession, Mason has a certain onyx figurine in the shape of a Black Panther. So that is where we get Gwen Ivor. So, until Dritz is old enough to begin training with Zachnophane, he's under the quote unquote, and I put in the notes, I put this in quotations, the care of his sister Vierna. Care most like, you know, think like the Dursleys in Harry Potter. Like, I mean, but worse somehow.
Oh, so the Worsleys?
There you go, the Worsleys.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, the puns, they're never ending.
It's true.
And so it's Vierna who first begins to suspect Dritz's unique disposition in regards to traditional Drow society. You know, she's all in as far as like, you know, like, this is what we do, this is how we act, this is how we think. And Dritz is like, I'm not into that. But he also is like very like strong headed and masters the levitation spell much quicker than usual, simply because he just doesn't want to quit. And so,
right,
like, she sees this sort of, you know, kindness more or less in him, but also like this like fierceness, this fierceness of will. So she's like not sure which is going to win out. So at 16 years old, Dritz begins training with Zachnophane, not realizing the weapon master is his father. Despite the obvious familial connection, Zachnophane and Dritz also share a distaste for the ruthless Drow society. You know, so the way Dritz feels about how messed up Drow society is,
yeah,
Zachnophane shares those beliefs, and that causes their bond to get even stronger. Near the end of his training, a lesser house, T. Kenduis, attacks and fails to eliminate another lesser house, House Freth. And so their failure results in every member's execution by the ruling council. Like I said, like this definitely, like, you know, this is a thing. Like if you attack another house, you need to make sure the deed is done.
Oh gosh.
So they're executed by the ruling council, who summon demons to feast upon their flesh.
Oh.
Again, all in, and I love it. So Dritz is disgusted by this, as any normal person would be, and his mother, Malice, seeing, you know, his reaction, magically disguises a goblin slave to appear as a drow and forces Dritz into battle with it before, and essentially, you know, forcing Dritz to kill what he thinks is another drow until the illusion wears off. And so that's sort of like, you know, if you're wondering like where Malice's, you know, headspace is at, where her heart is at, she's the kind of mom who will make her son kill one of his own, you know, because he doesn't like the fact, he doesn't like demons.
Doesn't want the attention.
Doesn't want
him.
Demons
doesn't
want... eating people.
Eating people? I mean, I gotta say I agree with him.
To disagree with Dritz on this
one. I'm not real big into demon feasts. It's not my scene.
Meanwhile, Alton is found by the matron mother of House Hanette, you know, found out, but rather than kill the imposter, she accepts Alton into her house and reveals to him it was House Duerden who destroyed his family. Soon after, Dritz is accepted into Melee Magthyr, which is the warrior school portion of the Academy of Menzo Berenzon.
Okay.
And here's where young drow are indoctrinated with the drow point of view, which is, you know, drow elves good, surface elves bad, Loth good, Corlin bad. Everything that we have is good. Everything that they have is bad.
We're right, they're wrong.
Right.
This is the best way.
Us against them. Which, you know, Dritz continues to push back against. Like, very critical thinking, Dritz is. So his first year there was tough. You know, he found it hard to adapt to the drow way of thinking, of just sort of like, you know, not making friends, you know, always looking out for yourself at the expense of others.
Right.
His second, third, fourth, and fifth years, though, his superior swordsmanship wins him the Grand Melee, which is like a big, like, year-end sort of excursion, sort of like a...
Okay.
Not adventure, but activity. And
so many activities at the academy.
Right. And in his eighth year, during a patrol, manages to kill two hook whores single-handedly, which is something that, you know, like people say, like even the great Zach Nafane, the weapons master of House Jordan, likely wouldn't be, you know, would be hard pressed to accomplish such a feat. Ooh. So he's definitely earning a reputation.
Right.
Discovering Dritz is training at the academy and thus separated from his family and his house, Alton decides that this will be that the young drow, that Dritz will be the first target for his vengeance. Like, so he wants to destroy the entire house and thinks like, I'll start off with Dritz. However, Masaj is able to dissuade Alton from his plan, telling him that the matron mother of House Hanet, Sinefe, has plans to quell the threat of House Duwarden permanently. So like, they're sort of like, you know, planting the seeds.
Yeah.
And so after 9 years of combat training, Dritz begins 6 months at Sorcerer, the wizarding school of the portion of the academy. And looky, look, who happens to be his tutor? None other than Masaj.
Of course.
It was actually Sinefe who arranged this so that Masaj could more closely study his foe. But now that string pulling came with a catch, that no harm was to come to Dritz while, you know, while doing this. You know, Masaj, you know,
right.
You know, Masaj wasn't able to, or Alton wasn't able to enact any sort of plan that he had because of, you know, what Masaj had mentioned about Sinefe, that, you know, she had other, right. She had greater plans at work, and
right,
Alton
and
doing anything, right, Alton doing anything would kind of mess that up.
Right.
So Massage was able to control himself. However, Alton could not. I mean, if you felt someone was responsible for killing your entire family, you know,
be hard pressed to not say something or act on that.
At least say something, right?
At least say something.
So he attempts to kill the Duwarden second boy. However, Guinevere, or it's Guinevere, or I've also heard Guinevere, Guinevere saves Dritz, and Massage sort of covers it up by saying, oh, that was a test. That was a test, and you totally passed.
Good job. Woo.
Yeah, but Dritz knew he was lying, but couldn't really figure out why, right? And this, dear listener, is also the first meeting of Dritz and Guinevere. So another 6 months. So he does the 6 months at Sorcerer, the wizarding portion of the academy, and then does then 6 months at Eric Tenelith, which is the clerical school of the academy. And so a total of 10 years training, most of it, you know, in swordsmanship, but, you know, a little dabble in the clerics, in the clerical arts and in the spellcasting arts, but a whole full decade to essentially get you ready. So the most significant occurrence during this time at Eric Tenelith was when Dritz graduated and then refused to participate in a ritual mass sex activity.
Oh.
Ritual
orgies. Got it.
Yep. Yeah. Not going to yuck anyone's yum. That's what the drow like to do. That wasn't Dritz's scene, though. Wasn't into it, and kind of like talks back. I think it's Viren. It talks back to one of his sisters, and she's like, "You are not going to talk to a priestess of Loth like that," and takes him down to the Drider lair, and threatens him with being turned into one of the creatures. Like Driders are like half drow, half spider creatures that have somehow displeased Loth. And have been transformed into like this barbaric creature.
It's and a curse so, and a punishment.
Dritz is threatened with that punishment should he defy, you know, his family once more. 2 days later, Dritz is part of a patrol group, which also includes his brother Deenan, as well as Massage and Gwen Ivier. It's during this time they raid a group of surface elves who they then mercilessly kill. And again, Dritz, like, obviously disgusted by the entire act.
Yeah.
But can't, it's, you know, he has to think quickly because he can't show that he's disgusted by it. And he can't just be like, oh, hey, you guys have, you can have all the fun. I'm fine. Like, he's expected to kill.
Yeah.
And
that's
so
part of the job, my dude.
Right. And so he ends up, he pretends to kill an elf child. Smearing her own mother's blood on her and telling her to lay still. And so, which is gnarly. Like, everyone's like, and when they come back, they're like, oh, how'd the hunt go? Like, oh, we killed a bunch of surface elves. Like, I had 3 killed and I had this many. And Mal is sort of like, oh, what about Dritz? You know, my tender hearted son. What about him? Like, oh, only one. And she's like, oh, only one, huh? And they're like, oh yeah, but it was a child, and she's very pleased by this.
Oh.
Right.
That's comforting. Lovely mother figure.
This act of mercy on Dritz's part actually causes House Duwarden to lose the favor of Loth.
Oh.
Unbeknownst to them. Like, they lose the favor and they're not exactly sure why. So House Hanet, the House Hanet matron mother Cinefe learns that Duwarden has lost favor and immediately works to exploit that. Meanwhile, right, of course, I mean, like, keep in keeping with the Drow society.
Right. It's very, very brutal.
Meanwhile, Zakhnephane, believing his son was, you know, essentially like just like the other Drow and really wasn't like himself at all, and had killed an elf child, challenges Dritz to a sparring match, with both realizing, you know, that it's actually going to be a duel and possibly to the death.
Probably.
But first, Dritz's patrol group has to investigate activity elsewhere, where they discover a group of Snirfneblin, which are deep gnomes.
I love the Snirfneblin.
So these deep gnomes are mining too far into Drow territory.
Of course.
And in the ensuing battle, they summon an earth elemental who Dritz, with the help of Gwen Ivor, is able to defeat. Which, so, like, already, like, he's defeated 2 hook horrors by himself. He takes down an earth elemental almost single-handedly. Again, like, the reputation just continues to grow and grow. However, in the chaos of this battle, Massage decides this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And shoots and strikes Dritz with a lightning bolt, allowing the deep gnome. Right. Yeah. So he's like, this is the time to strike, right, allowing the deep gnomes in their retreat to take Dritz captive.
Ooh.
And so this, you know, was, after all, Drow territory. So it doesn't take long. And it's not very difficult for Deenan and the rest of the group to track them down.
Right.
They track down Dritz. They save him with the help of Gwen Ivor, and they slaughter all the deep gnomes, except for one.
Oh.
They leave one gnome alive, Belwar Disengulf. He was allowed to live.
Name.
It's great. It's really cool. He's allowed to live and return to the Snirfneblin city of Blingdenstone.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because Dritz is like, hey, like, let's leave him alone to tell of, you know, to tell the story, like, you know, of not, you know, to be a warning to everyone else. You know, obviously, if everyone dies, then it could be, they might not ever
know.
Right. Yeah. They might not ever find out what happened to him. And yeah, so
that guy's a calling card.
Right. And so they're like, hey, that's a good idea. But Demon's like, I've got an even better idea. Let's do that. But let's cut his hands off.
Oh.
So Belwar has his hands cut off and sent back to Blingdenstone.
Oh.
So by this point, House Duwarden already knows that they've lost their favor and that a house is moving against him. Mm-hmm. And so in order to discover exactly who is doing that, Malice and her daughters summon a Yawklul, which is a handmaiden of Loth. It's a lesser type of Tenari demon. And they have 4 different forms available to them: ooze, gaseous, spider, and humanoid. And so
they sound pleasant.
They're disgusting. Definitely look up.
I'm absolutely looking it up, like live reaction. Oh,
they look like disgusting yellow melted candles.
It is a demon candle. This is true.
Yeah, it's horrible. Everything about the drow is gross.
I mean, they are kind of yuck. LOL.
So the Yawkle, they summon this demon to reveal. Who reveals that House Hanet is their enemy. And it's also at this point that, you know, that's revealed that Drit sort of puts two and two together and realizes that, hey, that wasn't a misguided or misaimed lightning bolt. Massage was trying to kill me. You know, House Hanet is against us. And so obviously, you know,
they got to go.
I mean, well, I mean, like, obviously, like, you know, he's trying to kill me.
Right.
And so. With the knowledge that their hidden enemy is House Hanet, Malice and other priestesses once again summon a Yawkle in order to learn Cinefae's standing with Loth. I misspoke. So they aren't sure that they've lost Loth's favor yet, but they do know a house is against him. It's when they summon the second Yawkle that they discover that a recent action by a member of their family has invoked the wrath of the Spider Queen.
Jeez.
So meanwhile, Dritz and Zagnafane, they have their quote unquote sparring match and they fight ferociously until they eventually each admit their secrets. You know, Dritz says like, look, hey, like you're all pissed off because you think I killed this elf child. I didn't. I just made it look like I did. And Zagnafane's like, oh, cool. I'm your dad.
So, I really like the abridged version. I would like to see Dritz abridged. So if that ever exists, I'm in.
And so
watch it.
Unbeknownst to Zagnafane and Dritz, Malice and her daughters have been scrying the entire fight and now know the exact reason that their house has lost favor. So they know that, you know, a recent action by a member of their family has invoked the wrath of the Spider Queen. Mm-hmm. And now they know it's the fact that Dritz didn't lie about killing the elf child and in fact lied about it.
Mm-hmm.
So Malice specifically orders all of the family to remain in the House Duarden compound due to fear of an assassination attempt by House Hanet. Despite this, Dritz manages to sneak away, learning that Dritz has journeyed from his house alone. Massage decides this is the time to try. This is, you know, take two in my let's kill Dritz plan. But this time, the mage orders Guinevere to find and kill the young warrior.
Oh.
Instead, there's a bond that is already, you know, started to. There's like an instant connection in the bond, when the two met, and the bond just gotten deeper and deeper as they've grown to know each other longer and longer.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of killing Dritz, the magical Black Panther aids him in surviving an attack from a cave fisher, and this pretty much cements their bond forever.
Permanently.
This led to a battle against Massage and Alton against Dritz, who were both killed, and after the fight, Dritz makes a vow to never kill another drow again. He takes possession of the magical statuette used to summon Guinevere, before returning to Menzo Berenzin.
Okay.
And while this is happening, Zagnafane is confronted by Malice and her daughters, who explain that Dritz's actions on the surface have cost him his life. Like, she's like, we have to kill Dritz now because of what he's done. That's the only way that's going, you know, that's what's going to get favor back on House Duarden. Instead, Zagnafane volunteers to be sacrificed to Loth in his son's place, an alternative that Malice accepts. Because, you know, she's like, well, you know, from what I can tell or what I've heard, Dritz is every much the swordsman that Zagnafane is. You know, so I'm essentially swapping out, you know, father for son, and we still have a weapons master. So cool. So Zagnafane is killed, sacrificed. Dritz returns home to find out that his family is preparing for war against House Hanet. Has learned that Zagnafane has been killed, has been sacrificed, and overcome with grief, he deserts House Duarden. And accompanied only by Guinevere, Dritz leaves Menzo Berenzin in search of a life outside of the city and the ways of the drow. I mean, that's a hell of a way to kick off a story.
That is just didn't even ease in, just kicks the door in, and I mean, it's
you know, and so like it's interesting because, like I said, these aren't the first books that were published. The first books that were published are the what's known as the Icewind Dale trilogy.
Yes.
And in them, Dritz is more of a supporting character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really supposed to be a vehicle for another character that R.A. Salvatore created. But mm-hmm. something about this drow character just appealed to everybody. And then at that point, it was off to the races. And so, like I said, Salvatore comes back, fills in some of the gaps in the history.
I love it.
And so, yeah, like I said, I read these a while back. And so going through and, you know, going through the plot and, you know, figuring out like, you know, what to talk about, what not to talk about. I was like, oh, man, I forgot how great these books are. Like, I kind of want to read them again.
I mentioned it and I got a laundry list of what I need to read. Like, no, you're going to need to read all of these, but this is where you're going to start. And this is the order you're going to go in. Like, okay. Okay. So I have several book reports due now.
Well, while you're getting all that ready, let's go to the middle of the show so we can thank our patrons. Whew. We can discuss some recent D&D news and check out what the DMs Guild has to offer.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello and welcome to the middle of the show, where we thank our patrons, talk about the latest and greatest in D&D, and then hit up the DMs Guild to see what kind of cool homebrew stuff we can get into.
Homebrew shenanigans.
Yeah, Mary picked out a humdinger of a DMs Guild Corner of the Week pick. Like, it is gnarly. It is very cool.
Oh, yeah.
But first things first, let's thank our patrons. Thank you to all of our patrons that signed up on patreon.com/dndlorecast. And this week we want to especially highlight our $5 patrons, the Apprentice tier, Daniel P. and Jack. They are able to get ad-free early episodes. They get Patreon has this cool thing where it has its own like special RSS feed. And so you know, bypass Spotify, Apple, all that. You can put it into your own podcatcher and don't have to worry about listening to ads.
That's just the best part. It's ad-free.
And if you are interested in joining them, like I said, you can go to patreon.com/dndlorecast. We also have a $10 tier, a $25 tier, and a $75 tier, each with their own cool, specific, unique bonuses and perks. Like the $25 tier, you can join our Multiverse Famous patron chat of the patron roundtable of the month, where we discuss, we always have a fun topic to discuss. And that's going to be next week. And actually next week, we're going to do some monster rankings.
Yes, I'm kind of excited. I have
everyone's excited. Like
hardest time. I can't choose. Of course I can't choose. Why would I be decisive about this one thing?
Yeah, I put the message out to our wizard level patrons, you know, to let them know. And they're like, oh, that's a good topic. Yeah, that's something I'm going to have to think about this. Because and I said, like, you can come at it from any different angle. You can talk about, you know, your favorite monsters to DM or your least favorite monsters to fight as, you know, as a player character. And our patron Tech Sinstar even mentioned, like, yeah, and there are certain monsters that I hate going up against when I'm a certain character, like a certain cleric class. And I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are perfectly fine with one class, but then you throw some of the other classes in there and it's just not not conducive.
Not good. They pretty much, like, you know, it's almost like they're like an anti whatever, like an anti rogue.
Yep.
It's like, oh, you're mm-hmm. about stealth. Well, this one, you know, has a, you know,
That's fine. I can see you through the fabric exactly, of like reality. You cannot hide from me.
Perception of 25. But yeah, so lots of cool stuff over on patreon.com/dndlorecast. T-shirts, mugs, stickers, all sorts of fun stuff. Yes. So definitely check it out if you're able to. If you are not but still want to support the show, you can definitely do so by telling a friend, by leaving reviews mm-hmm. on Apple mm-hmm. Podcasts or Spotify, interacting with us on social media, Twitter yep. at dndlorecast, emailing us dndlorecast@gmail.com. Or joining the Robots Radio Network Discord and talking to us there. We're all like, I literally mm-hmm. always have it open.
Same. I'm very rarely not on Discord.
If you have a question, if you need some advice, if you want to workshop something, you know,
yes,
bring it up and you will get the help you are seeking.
It is very true. It's an amazing community. I absolutely love our fans.
So what's going on? What's new in D&D? Well, not a whole lot. Like, there was a while where it was just like week after week of just news and news mm-hmm. and news. And so we're kind of like in the lull period. You know, Spelljammers come out. People are still talking about that. Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel. People are still talking about that. But now we're kind of sort of gearing up for Dragonlance at the end of the year. I'm going to go ahead and bring up D&D Beyond again. Like I said, they seem to be transitioning to that as sort of their digital
like, information hub, basically. Right. Like, that is where you go if you want to hear anything and all the things D&D.
They've got, in just the past couple of days, they've got a couple of new articles. Embracing Villainy, How to Play an mm-hmm. Evil Character in Dungeons & Dragons. And Cleric 201, the best magic items for clerics.
Oh.
So yeah, so definitely some cool things to check out as far as, like, if you just want, you know, a little bit more information on sort of like the minutia of the mechanics itself, or like a role playing, you know. And then this was brought to our attention by the aforementioned Tex 10 Star. Mm-hmm. Yahtzee Dungeons and Dragons, a Yahtzee version. It's the classic shake, score, and shout dice game, but it has a Dungeons and Dragons like dice tower to
that's pretty cool
to use. Yeah, and I feel like it should be called Yahtzee and D. I feel like that's a missed opportunity there. But
they didn't have you on there, you know, didn't have, you
have
me
on
stuff,
they should, or at least I it wasn't my idea, so they should have Tex on the mm-hmm. on their marketing team. I've actually never played Yahtzee. Is that weird?
I guess we're equally as weird then. I also have never Yahtzee'd.
It's got the D&D logo, like branded dice tower. The dice have like owl bears, gelatinous cubes, beholders. You can find it in various places. We'll include a link to the miniature market, ad for it. It's one of those your son or your nephew or your whoever, your office secret Santa likes D&D. Mm-hmm. Here's something that they'll enjoy that they probably don't have.
Yeah, I did not know that was a thing. I'm not surprised by it. I didn't know that it was a thing.
I mean, it does feel like if I'm ever going to play Yahtzee, then I definitely would want to play D&D Yahtzee for sure. Just
buy it for when you're in the nursing home, then.
I guess so. I guess I'll buy it now and hoard it like a dragon until the time comes.
That's what they do.
And finally, let's go to the DMs Guild, the Dungeon Masters Guild, to see what kind of cool stuff, what kind of cool homebrew we can get into this week. Mary, you presented this to me. It's a humdinger.
It is a beefy boy is what it is. This is Crowns and Castles from John Riley. I actually found this in one of the D&D groups I'm in on Facebook, and he had posted it there, and I actually had a conversation with him about it before presenting it to make sure he was cool with it, which is always fun to get to do, get to talk to the creator about it. So Crowns and Castles is a 267 page book that allows you to play D&D as an empire strategy game. So it is zoomed out at 40,000 feet, basically.
Right.
You're no longer playing as a single character. You are in control of an entire realm that you create from scratch, making decisions for its military, economy, culture, diplomacy, all of it. The realm gains experience, they level up, you unlock new abilities, kind of a civ building type game variation of D&D. So you're going to do all of this. You can do, co-op, player versus player. You can mix environments with a DM who guides the world's narrative and lets you attempt anything that you can dream of. So it's got so much stuff in here. There's 27 races, 37 sub-races, with uniquely themed set of military units, 13 governments. There's backgrounds, extra skills for accomplishing your goals, things like recruiting, researching, sabotaging, etc. Different types of buildings. There's resources for you to explore, exploit, trade, and develop. Realm level spells, artifacts, military units, just everything you could possibly need for doing like large scale war. So that end of game battle that every DM dreads going into, because I don't know how to plan all that stuff. Boom. Done. And it just comes with so much for $20. It is a steal.
This reminds me a lot of the advanced D&D campaign setting Birthright, which is sort of like the same idea. It's where instead of like just individual player characters, you're controlling empires. And I was never able to experience that, when it came out, and I haven't been able to find anyone that's still playing it today, but seems so cool. Like, as opposed to, just having six, or having just one character to play as,
right.
You're now playing as an entire realm, as an entire kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I think it's so cool.
In talking with him, he had said, and it was one of the things that he had said that I thought was really neat. He said, "I like thinking bigger with these games, which to me means getting more people involved in the same space. So the end goal that I'd love to see is a few people DMing separate continents for a C&C game. And then however many DMs running their own D&D games in that collaborative homebrew world." So basically wants to bring as many people in as possible and use it as a tool to bring people together even more, which is just beautiful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's very cool. And they're going to start developing and testing and adding rules for naval and airship combat. So, and if you buy Crowns and Castles now, that will be included as a free update. So, which is very cool. So yeah. So links to the D&D Yahtzee, links to Crowns and Castles will be available in the show notes. Definitely check them out. I wish I could play it right now.
It's pretty fun.
Well, that being said, let's get back to some drow. What do you say?
Oh, absolutely. Always ready for some drow.
Hello and welcome back. In the first half of the episode, we discussed the book Homeland, and we'll finish off the Dark Elf trilogy by discussing Exile and Sojourn. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it. So Exile, it is 10 years later. The houses of Duerden and Hanet are still locked in war. but without the blessing of Loth, neither house can fully destroy the other. So they've just been going at it for a decade
back
now.
And forth for over a decade now, and Loth is just watching it happen.
Just watching it. And it's not until House Duwarden employs the houseless Jarlaxle and his mercenary group, Bregan Daerth, that they're able to finally vanquish Hunnet, which moves Duwarden to number 8. And the way they do that, like, Jarlaxle actually was hired by Hunnet, and then Duwarden like undercuts them, like basically like, okay, like, hey, like, they're paying you this much to join them. How about we pay you this much to turn on them? And that's exactly what they do. Which is, I mean, again, and Jarlaxle, you know, he's, I mean, he's a mercenary. That's what he does. So
that's what they do.
That's what they do. However, one, like I mentioned earlier, like, you know, when two houses, when one house attacks the other, there needs to be like no survivors.
Right.
And I said there are some exceptions, and this is one. So the matron mother of the first house, matron Ben Ray, says that Cynife, the matron mother of House Hunnet, is to join Duwarden as, quote, as an eldest daughter. And so, like, they, she says, just say that she's your eldest daughter who left to study somewhere else and has recently come back to Menzo Berenzin. A little weird. So, but Cynife is now part of House Duwarden. So Dritz, on the other hand, has been surviving in the wilds of the Underdark this entire time, with his former house continuing to hunt him down in order to regain Loth's favor. So this entire time that they're fighting House Hunnet, Malice is like, we got to find Dritz. We got to bring him back. We got to kill him. And then we'll be able to finally, we'll get the favor back and we'll be able to win this war. But Dritz, you know, it proves hard to catch. One such hunt ends with Dritz knocking out his brother Deenan and nearly killing his sister Breeza before Gwen Ivor stops him, because Dritz has entered in what he calls the hunter persona, where it's almost like completely instinctual. Like, there's no regard, like, you know, there's no regard for how he feels about the sanctity of life, or like how he personally fears how he's against the drow way of living and the drow way of thinking. The hunter persona is, you know, more brutal than drow. And, you know, he had made that vow that he would never kill another drow again. And so, you know, what's a good friend, you know, than someone who's going to stop you from making dumb mistakes?
It's true. That's absolutely their job. That's what they signed up for.
That's what Gwen Ivor does. However, Malice is intent on bringing her wayward son back home, and hatches a scheme to sacrifice the Duwarden patron Risen. Like, the Duwarden patron is essentially like the as high as a male can get in drow society. That's what that is. So she's like, I'm going to sacrifice Risen in order to gain enough favor to enact this plan that she has. And so they summon another Yokel, but instead, like at the last second, doesn't sacrifice Risen. Instead, Malice kills Cynife.
Oh.
And so this deviousness actually is pleasing to the Yokel and gains Malice enough favor to perform Zincarla, a spell which reanimates a corpse.
Oh.
And so her plan is to perform Zincarla, resurrect Zacnafane, who will then hunt down and kill his son.
Insult to death. To injury. It's insult to death, 30. Goodness.
So a little bit about Zincarla. This spell is a more advanced form of reanimation, where the reanimated corpse is not just simply a mindless zombie. In fact, retains all the capabilities it had while it was alive. And it's considered the highest gift of Loth, and it's very rarely granted. So this special sort of zombie is known as a spirit wraith, and is bound to do a single task chosen by the person that reanimated it and also approved by Loth. So in this case, the task is to hunt down Dritz, to give the corpse the abilities it had while it was alive. The spirit of the person who the corpse belonged to in life is called to inhabit the body, but is given very little control over the corpse's actions beyond the use of its abilities. So
they're just watching, just a passenger.
Essentially, kind of like think sort of like being John Malkovich.
Okay.
And so, but you know, it's interesting that the spirit is part of it, because I mean, the, you know, without the spirit is just, you know, this body that
it's just a corpse.
It's just a corpse. And so they, you know, want it to be able to do the things it did while it's living. So that's why they have to incorporate the spirit into it. But you know, but it says it's given very little control. So it still has some control. For example, a spirit wraith that is driven to do something against its old nature has a chance of breaking free of its control.
Oh, okay.
And only through the willpower and complete control of the caster are the spirit wraith's desired skills kept separate from the unwanted memories and emotions. As long as that control is maintained, the spirit wraith cannot tire or be distracted from its task. So at this point, Malice is completely physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, she's devoted to controlling the spirit wraith.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Dritz, for the second time, has come upon a group of Sneerfneblin, and this time decides to follow them to their home of Blingdenstone and surrenders himself to them very peacefully. And they're just completely like and utterly confused by this. They're like, drow. Like, wait, what? He's not trying to kill us? Like, he's surrendering us to us? Like, what doesn't make any sense. And yeah, it doesn't make any sense to them until Dritz asks to speak to none other than Belwar Disengulp.
Mm.
So the deep gnome, now with an enchanted pickaxe on one arm and a hammer on the other, you know, vouches for Dritz and convinces the other Sneerfneblin that he is not like the other drow. He remembers that Dritz tried
was the one that saved his life.
Yeah, he saved his life, and two, like, you know, wasn't responsible for having his hands cut off. So thus Dritz is allowed to stay in Blingdenstone, albeit they take his weapons, they take his armor, and they take the onyx statuette, which calls forth Gwen Ivor. So all the while, the spirit wraith of Zacnafane is leaving a trail of death behind him as he searches for Dritz, which the deep gnomes of Blingdenstone become aware of. They purchase information from Jarl Axel, who informs them of, you know, what's causing this, what's behind all this, which forces the deep gnomes to cast Dritz out in order to protect themselves. Again, a very reasonable response. Like, hey, this thing is looking for you, well then you need to get out of here, because like you just got nothing to do with us,
because I don't want to be found in your place.
Right. However, Belwar, being the kind of deep gnome that he is, joins him. He's like, well, if he's not welcome here, I don't want to be here either.
I like him.
He's a great character. This is actually my favorite of the three books of the trilogy.
Ooh.
The two get into some shenanigans involving various creatures, including surviving an attack from a human wizard before finding shelter, which is then invaded by a hook horror after a few days. And Dritz is about to kill it before he realizes that it's not a hook horror, but rather a peck, which is a earth elemental creature with large pupilless eyes. They kind of look like gnomes a little bit. It's a peck that's been transformed, likely through true polymorph or something similar, by a wizard known as Brister Fendelstick, which is the spellcaster that I mentioned earlier, the human wizard that that they survived an attack from.
Okay.
So as a result of the spell, the peck cannot remember his true name or his past. So Dritz and Belwar name the creature Clacker, because of the clacking sounds his hooks make.
Oh.
And decide to assist in getting the wizard to reverse the spell. So they once again find the wizard, and I put in quotes, convince him, because it's like they don't really convince him. They're like, hey, do this or we're gonna kill you.
That sounds like a very convincing argument. Why should I? Because otherwise death. Right. You know what, you got a good point. I should do this.
I enjoy living, so I'm gonna do this.
I think you're onto something there, friend. I'll do it.
So he's going to change Clacker back, but before he starts the spell, he curses Clacker under his breath. Clacker hears it, and in an animalistic rage, Clacker kills Fendlestick.
Oh.
So now, like, we don't know, like, no one's sure exactly who has this sort of spellcasting ability to change Clacker back into a peck.
Right.
But they're determined to figure out a way. Soon after, in order to gain distance between themselves and Zachnafane, who is gaining ground on them, the three continue to travel and are attacked and imprisoned by a group of mind flayers.
My gosh.
It is the Underdark, after all.
This is true. The Underdark is a terrifying place.
Zachnafane comes upon this Illithid settlement and kills a handful to make his way in, while Gwen Ivor aids Dritz, Belwar, and Clacker in escaping. The Spirit Wraith confronts Dritz, and they duel, with Clacker stepping in to aid his friend. Mm-hmm. Dritz then agrees to return to Menzo Berenzen to find a spellcaster powerful enough to help Clacker, but unfortunately, Clacker is killed by Zachnafane as they attempt to escape. Which, you know, that's why I love this book so much. The characters, just like, you know, these characters that are introduced in this book, you know, and Belwar is introduced in the first book, but he's really fleshed out in this one, his character.
Right.
Rather. But like Clacker, you know, like the whole point is that he's becoming this mindless beast.
But he doesn't want to be, and that's not who he is.
And even as far gone as he is, his last act is that of a friend, is that of, you know, of who he truly is, which is sacrificing himself for his friend.
That's so sweet.
It's a great book. So Dritz and Zachnafane duel once more. But meanwhile, back in Menzo Berenzen, Malice is completely drained from this constant control that she requires of the Spirit Wraith that she's been, you know, this has gone on several days now. And like
exhaustion
said,
levels got to be creeping up there.
Absolutely 100% correct. She loses control of Zachnafane at this time, and before she's able to regain it, Zachnafane explains what happens to Dritz and then jumps into a acid lake cavern.
Oh.
And the destruction of the Spirit Wraith causes psychic damage to Malice, who then is immediately killed by her daughter Breeza. Like, you know, so Breeza, much like Deenan did in the first book, seizes opportunity. Breeza sees her opportunity, takes it, kills her mother, becomes the matron mother of House Tuarden in that moment.
That's a different podcast.
However, Matron Banair has plotted against House Tuarden this entire time, and uses a previously given gift of 200 soldiers to kill everyone except for Vierna. So Banair is like, hey, we know you're going through some hard times. We want to be there for you too. Here's 200 soldiers. And then once they're inside the compound, it's like, you know,
Trojan horse.
Absolutely Trojan horse.
Trojan horse. I love it.
And so they kill everyone except for Vierna, who then becomes a handmaiden for House Banair. And then Deenan, he also is allowed to live. He joins Bregan Dayearth. You know, he joins up with Jarl Axel.
Oh, okay.
You know, save for those two and Dritz, technically, House Duarden is gone at this point in time. Dritz then accompanies Belwar back to Blingdenstone before taking his leave for the surface, and awaiting his next adventure, which takes place in Sojourn, the third book of the trilogy. What were you saying?
Okay. So he's just doing so much. I'm tired listening to everything he's had to deal with.
This is now, he's like 40 at this point, so.
I'm still a big boy.
Yeah, I mean, on the drow, like, lifeline, he's still a baby. So, set a short while after the events of Exile, Sojourn finds Dritz living mountainside, acclimating to life on the surface. He encounters a group of gnolls who invite him to be an ally, and he starts to join up with them, not knowing that they have plans to raid a local farm and then kill and enslave the humans living there, which understandably, you know, predictably, he protests. Yeah. And predictably, the gnolls turn on him. And he and Gwen Ivor quickly dispatch the group. Realizing he knows little of the new world around him. I mean, he literally joined up with a band of murderous, you know, thieves.
Murder gnolls.
He decides to learn more about the surface and its inhabitants, starting with the intended victims of this gnoll raid. So he goes down to that little village and he comes upon the children first, seeing them innocently play without the obvious malice encountered in drow children at play. Like, he sees sort of like something, you know, like, I can't remember exactly. I think they're like playing tag or something, or they're doing something where, you know, and Dritz really, you know, makes a point that, like, oh, at this point they would start fighting. Drow kids will start fighting, but he sees yep. Like, oh, it's all part of this game. Like, everyone's having fun. They're not like drow at all. This is awesome.
They're not murdering each other. These children are being kind and making friends.
That's a pretty low bar. Are your kids murdering each other? No, I guess they're pretty good kids.
Oh, heck yeah, you're doing a good job. Those are some good kids. They're not killing.
When he finally reveals himself, he tries unsuccessfully to communicate with and befriend the youngest boy, Liam, who freaks out at the sight of this dark elf. You know, I mean, you got to understand, like, you know, for the most part, I don't even want to say for the most part, like, just about everyone is terrified of drows and thinks the right. worst of them.
They're absolutely super vilified for a long time for fair reason. Right. I'm not saying it's not
right.
reasonable.
I mean, like, we've discussed two whole books full of like awful nefarious behavior. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to, you know, tell him his name. He says, you know, he's saying Dritz. And this is where the Drizzt name comes up for the first time. The little boy, okay. you know, hears Dritz, says Drizzt. And so Drizzt is sort of like this, not like a, it's like a moniker that Dritz has, you know, for those. And mm-hmm. he remembers it as, you know, as one that was created out of fear.
Right.
So the little boy and his friends run off. The villagers decide to look for this drow, and that group is headed up by a trapper named Roddy McGristle.
Of course, that's a trapper. That is the most trapper name I have ever heard in my life.
It's like, yeah, I mean, like, it's like the McGristle family. It's like, there's not too much y'all can do, and then. Then they named the baby Roddy, and they're like, okay, well, this one's a trapper, obviously.
Well, we know what he's going to do when he grows up.
Goodness. So in the subsequent hunt, a quickling, small, like, little sprite working for a bar guest named Ulgulu, who was in fact pulling the strings of the gnolls that Dritz killed earlier that were trying to raid the village. Ugulu was pulling the strings of those gnolls. Ugulu is, like I said, he's a bar guest. They are Lupin shapeshifter fiends who come from the outer plane of Gehenna. This quickly exposes Dritz, you know, because he's like, hey, like, this is the dude that killed our gnolls. Like, screw this guy. This exposure leads to one of McRistle's dogs attacking the drow and being killed in the process. And Dritz also loses one of his scimitars during this whole scuffle. The quickling, who is named Tephanus, realizes, you know, that Stritz that is responsible for killing the Null group and hatches a scheme to frame him. He, taking the form of a drow, Tephanus kills the entire family, like the little boy from before, Liam, kills him and his entire family with the scimitar that Dritz had left behind in order to frame him. Like I said, the books go hard. The books go hard in the paint.
They're just completely super hard in the paint. So, zero chill.
Upon learning what had been done, Dritz swears revenge, partly out of grief and also because he feels somewhat responsible that, you know, for what has happened to this family.
Right.
An adventuring party from nearby Sundabar is composed and sent to deal with the quote drow threat. It's headed by a ranger and chosen of Mistra named Dove Falconhan. Dove, however, is more astute than
a commoner. She's got a little better head on her shoulders
And thankfully for Dritz and, you know, for Dritz's sake, because studying the crime scene, she begins to believe that shenanigans are afoot. You know, she is familiar with drow and their, you know, unparalleled swordsmanship. And she's like, you know, she's like, these sword wounds are,
that is not done by you or by somebody that knew this weapon. Yeah.
Dritz, meanwhile, has found Olgulu's lair, kills him, kills his brother, battles a hill giant named Loggerbottoms. You love that name. I know you do.
I do. I just love a silly name.
A hill giant named Loggerbottoms. The hill giant's also killed, but Dritz is injured during this encounter. Dritz confronts one of Falconhan's party, an elf named Kellendel, but is unable to convince Kellendel of his good intentions. It's only until the drow helps the party, his pursuers, during a stone giant ambush. And this, obviously, like, instead of, you know, using this to escape, Dritz helps them. And this, coupled with Falconhan's previous suspicions, this is enough to convince them that Dritz is not like his kin.
He's not like the others.
And they let him go after tending his wounds.
Oh.
McGristle still, you know, it's still a little raw about losing his dog. Also still wants that 2,000 gold piece bounty.
Yeah.
And so has not forgotten about Dritz at all. Dritz, meanwhile, holes up Mountainside for the winter and actually gets some unknown assistance from Kellendel. Like, Kellendel, like, sort of, like, I was going to say supplies him with supplies. You know, gets him, like, you know, firewood and stuff like that.
It's me. Here I am. Supplies.
And when the spring returns, Dritz explores the other side of the river and runs afoul of the Orc King Grawl. He is aided in this fight by Montolio de Bruche, the blind ranger of Maliki. After this, Montolio, or Munshi, as he is better known, takes Dritz under his wing, you know, so to speak, and teaches him common, for one, but also the ways of the ranger and those of Maliki, goddess of the forest. And so this is where Dritz the ranger begins to, you know, formulate.
Okay.
Dritz also comes to terms with the guilt he feels over the murder of the family several months back. McGristle, of course, tracks Dritz to Mushi's Grove, as it's known, but the blind ranger lies to him to protect Dritz and sends McGristle on a wild goose chase. So who else comes back? Tephanus, the quickling, returns to alert McGristle of Mushi's deception and enters into an alliance with Grawl. Then the trapper, the quickling, and Grawl, your king, all form an alliance to finally capture and kill Dritz. The Battle of Mushi's Grove takes place, and, you know, long story short, the good guys win. Kellendel shows up with some of his cousins to help out, and afterwards they take McGristle back to Sunderbar to be tried for various crimes.
Nice.
However, Tephanus helps McGristle escape, and the Strangler, or the Strangler. Well, yeah, he becomes a Strangler by strangling Kellendale to death.
Gosh.
And is like just dead set on getting Dritz, you know.
McGristle the Strangler sounds terrifying, by the way. Just
Tephanus, you know, is had enough. He's like, look, we've tangled with his drow several times, and each time we come out on the losing end. Like, we need to do something else. He's like, look, and so he tells McGristle, like, hey, like, you're trying to kill a drow that's already dead. Like, he was killed by a warg at the previous battle. Like, you just didn't know about it. Like, he's gone. Like, no need to go back. And so, you know, they go off on their merry way. And soon after, Mushi dies of natural causes, and Dritz fills a promise that he had made earlier to leave the grove and discover the world. So Mushi knows that Dritz would be very content to stay in Mushi's grove forever. But he's like, no, right. Like, you need to go out and you need to.
The world needs you.
Pretty much. So Dritz wanders north and is chased away from one town after another. But he feels the goddess Maliki is guiding his way, so he doesn't take that rejection to heart.
Yeah.
6 years pass, and McGristle hears rumors of a dark elf, you know, walking on the surface and wandering from city to city, and he realizes that Tephanus has lied to him. He actually throws the sprite in a bag and smashes it against the wall, killing him.
Oh, goodness.
I know. It's, yeah. And he begins his hunt anew. By this point, Dritz has taken up with the Weeping Friars, a group of beggars and religious zealots who believe that the more that they suffer, the less the world has to endure.
Okay. I don't think that's how it works, but all right.
Oh, I kind of got a little ahead of myself. McGristle has not killed Tephanus at this point. At this point, like, they, you know, they're still trying to hunt down the drow. It's actually Tephanus who manages to trap the friars and Dritz in the lair of a red dragon, Hephaestus. Hephaestus. And only Dritz is quick thinking and tricking the red dragon into thinking that he's actually, that Dritz himself was actually the black dragon, Mergen de Vinisander, cursed by a spell to take this form, which allowed them to escape, because Dritz remembered, like, from lore, that this black dragon had lavender eyes, which Dritz has lavender eyes, which is which is unique amongst drow. And so the red dragon, Hephaestus, you know, says, like, oh yeah, like, you're my black dragon brethren,
like the Greek god of fire.
Yeah, well, he's known for his fire breath.
Makes sense.
And
I like it.
Dritz realizes that when Hephaestus, you know, uses his fire breath, he closes his eyes, and so is able to kind of goad him into, like, the biggest fire breath ever, so that he can close his eyes and the Weeping Friars can escape. And then Dritz eventually escapes on his own. And from here, Dritz heads to 10 towns in Icewind Dale on the suggestion of one of the friars. It's at this point that McGristle catches up with the monks, and Tephanus, that's when he actually, Tephanus accidentally spills the beans that they were responsible for trapping them in the dragon's lair. And this is when McGristle brutally kills Tephanus by trapping him in a bag and slamming him against the wall. And then goes on to torture the Weeping Friars for information before killing them as well.
He's just super
pleasant.
He's
the worst. He's absolutely, yeah. I sort of, like, in reading this, I envision the scene from Fellowship of the Ring, where they're torturing Gollum for information, and he just yells out, like, you know, Shire Baggins. I just remember, like, I imagine one of the friars saying, you know, Dritz, 10 towns.
Yes. Probably how I would have.
So Dritz shows up the 10 towns, but he's not allowed in by the spokesman for Bryn Shander, whose name is Cassius. because obviously because he's a drow, right? Yep. But he instead advises him to like, hey, just chill out on the northern slopes of Kelvin's Karn, which is like a mountain, formation close right. by, and sort of like mm-hmm. you know, win the people over by sort of protecting them, like sort of acting as a scout and protecting them from harm. And that'll be a way for them right. to see that you're actually a good guy. And mm-hmm. so it's here that Dritz meets Catterbury, the adopted human daughter of Brunner Battlehammer, the dwarf, who also meets the drow after a battle with a polar worm. Brunner doesn't believe that Dritz is a threat, but also doesn't want his adopted daughter continuing to meet with him. Eventually, right. McGristle shows up to tell everyone that Dritz is responsible for the murder of an entire family, which Brunner finds hard to believe. I mean, he doesn't believe he's dangerous. He just doesn't, you know, he's a father. He doesn't want his kid getting into anything that might, you know, get her.
Right. I don't think that you're a problem, but you are what
right.
you are.
And so, but he's like, I don't believe that. I mean, he did, you know, he's posed no threats to us so far. And in fact, helped me against this polar worm.
Right.
You know, he finds it hard to believe, you know, considering even just like the little bit he knows of Dritz. Catterbury defies her father and seeks out Dritz to find out the truth and ends up getting captured mm-hmm. by McGristle, who reveals yeah, he doesn't care about that family's memory. He doesn't even care about the bounty that's owed on Dritz's head. He just wants revenge. They fight, they battle. Dritz tries to convince the trapper several times to stop. He's like, hey, like you're not going to win this fight. And then finally he's able to knock him unconscious. And he's pretty much, McGristle's run out of town on rail, pretty much. And Brunner offers Dritz a place in 10 towns. And the trilogy ends with this great line. Dritz surmised one phrase clearly, words he had waited so many years to hear. Welcome home.
Aww.
And that yeah. is the Dark Elf trilogy.
That is so much.
It's, yeah.
so much to process.
It's a lot of fun. It's and if you have read the books, I hope that you know this little synopsis was a fun, you know, trip down memory lane. If you haven't read the mm-hmm, books mm-hmm. and you think that, you know, there's no need because you already know what happens, definitely I still recommend definitely checking them out. There are a lot, you know, like I said, it's three books condensed into about an hour. I definitely recommend reading them. They're a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I have not yet read them, but it's on the list.
You should definitely check them out for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I think that pretty much wraps us up for this week.
That's a lot to digest.
If you have any questions or have any if anything was unclear about the synopsis, like I said, you, mm-hmm. hit us up on Twitter at DndLorecast.
Yes.
Email dndlorecast@gmail.com or on the Robots Radio Network Discord. All those links are in the show notes.
That's where we'll be.
Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Sergio.
And I'm Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at @DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.